Hey everyone, it's your host of See Jurassic Right, Stephen Ray Morris here, just dropping in to say I hope you've been enjoying all the new episodes in 2023 and 2024 so far. There are new interviews with filmmakers, musicians, scientists, the screenwriter of Land Before Time, audio essays about the rich history of the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World franchise, and all the news about the upcoming animated show Jurassic World Chaos Theory, and the as-of-yet-untitled Jurassic World sequel coming next summer. I really need your help supporting the show right now, and you can do that by leaving a tip and or giving a monthly follow on Patreon, patreon.com/seejurassicright. There are $1 and $5 tiers, but more is coming. Sharing the show, giving 5-star reviews in Apple Podcasts, and liking and commenting on social, at Stephen Ray Morris on Instagram and Twitter, goes a long way to help boosting the show's visibility again online in this new era. I'm an independent podcaster, and your support is so important and means the world to me in keeping this podcast running. Link to the Patreon is in the show notes. Hold on to your butts. Thank you, and now on to the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
One, two, three, four.
Filled with awe and fright, see Jurassic Right. Bathe in amber light. See Jurassic Right. See Jurassic Park.
Peter, do you know what the sound a man makes when you stab him in the back?
No.
Well, I do, Peter.
Welcome to See Tolkien Right? Question mark. A special subset. I'm very excited to. Well, happy. I think I texted our guest Happy New Roar, which doesn't work as well. You know, per cast sign behind me just submitted the last episode. So, you know, it's a transitionary time. Happy Mew Year is a lot better. This person has been a guest on both of those podcasts many, many times, has even helped edit some episodes of this podcast. I want to get their reaction to me holding a dinosaur chicken nugget plush. And he has a very fun YouTube channel. It's a really cool deep dive into not all trashy lit, but a lot of trashy lit.
Well, mostly
trash. It came from the page. It's Andrew Roebuck.
Hello, Stephen. Happy to be here with this amazing chicky nuggy.
I know, right? Obviously, it's a dinosaur, and it's a sauropod, so it's a sauropod chicken nuggy. But there is something very, like, speaking of hobbit size, you know, it comes in bites.
You know, like that's speaking of dinosaurs. That's one of my favorite chapters in Stephen Brusanti's, his first Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs.
Yes.
Is when he talks about Romania, and apparently just had little dinosaurs in Romania. There's little dinosaurs.
Just cute little guys.
They're dinosaurs, but they were small. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they're all small over there. They're so beautiful.
This is how big Littlefoot is.
Oh my God, it is. Oh my goodness.
Well, I'm very excited because it's been a minute since we've chatted on pod, I feel like. Yeah? Question.
Even though it's been since, like, probably since, well, like, September, October.
Well, yes,
September.
That's right, because you officially became, well, no, I think Megan Lincott ended up beating you.
I think so. I think if you go through it, like, because she got, what, six? Was she six?
Yeah, because she had been every year since 2017, yep. basically. Yep.
But you, I mean, and that's fair. Like, that's good. That's how. That's the person who should hold the crown. You know what I mean?
You closed out because you did the last two Halloween episodes of the Purrcast, which feels very appropriate. But I just wanted to chat with you and kick off the year because this will be coming out in January. Just because, you know, this is the time where you sort of start to think about, you know, the beginning of the year, what we're doing.
Yeah. What are we doing? What are we doing with our lives, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm currently working on, I mean, obviously we posted, but there's my beautiful Mementiosaurus friend right there.
Aww, I love him.
Again, just to date it. And I found this, well, I wanted to shoot too. I found this glorious, like, 80s dinosaur. I think there's like a whole set of like, it's just a dinosaur book from our childhood kind of style book.
That's awesome.
I think you would really like it as far as like kind of just it. Because you've read books from animals' perspective.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Carnosaur, right, is from that? Or no, not no, Carnosaur. No. Raptor Red?
Raptor Red is. I have not actually read that one yet. I haven't read Raptor Red.
But this is basically like a 5-page short story about like Mementosaurus, da-da-da. I didn't really mention it that much in the episode, but... I don't know. I thought you would be delighted to see.
I am delighted. 80s, like an early paleontology art, goes so hard. And it's just like, I love it so much. Like, I love the way that the classical paleontology make dinosaurs look. Because they're always in like action poses.
Yeah.
And they're like going through some water. And she's like, boom, boom. Where I like, I feel like, again, it's awesome. I love all dinosaur art. But I feel like sometimes modern dinosaur like books are a little bit more like textbooks where they're like, here is size of person compared to dinosaur. And it's just like, yeah, but like, I want to see the dinosaur like dancing or something. Like, I want to see, like, you know, going to the movies with his friends, you know?
You want to see a dab, you know?
Dabosaur? No.
Real Dabosaurus.
Dabosaurus. Actually, everyone stops listening as soon as we talk about.
Yeah, this is how we kick off the year. No, but actually, I was thinking a lot because you have always been a consummate researcher. In everything you do.
It's a problem. It can get a problem, especially when it's like, because I do a lot of novelizations. Like, that's my current obsession, one of my current obsessions. And it's a problem when you just suddenly discover something has a novelization and you're like, no one else is going to talk about this. I guess I have to find the novelization for the Doom movie starring The Rock that no one remembers. And I was like, there's a movie novelization. I gotta buy it. I recently bought 3 books that were completed a trilogy of books based off of a multiplayer online game that you can no longer play anymore. They made a series of 3 books for it.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. I mean, yeah. I had, you know, again, I've done a lot of work with Magic the Gathering lately. And one of the things about that was that I read the novelizations. Because they made novels based on the sets for a while. I don't know if they...
Really? That's awesome.
There's a great podcast called the Magic Story Podcast that kind of does a similar thing where they kind of go into the lore and the flavor text a lot more. The gals over there are really great, Harless and Natalie. But, you know, it's just this thing of like, this is my, you know, this set comes out and they would release a book for the set. And it would be like a story.
Oh, that's cool. They did a board game. I don't know if it was a board game or whatever. It's like Wizards of the Coast, right? Like that's what it was. Back in the like early 2000s, they did something called Dark Matter, which was their version of basically of X-Files, but like of their own and like their own things. And there was a series of novels released for that. And I recently like bought some of the novels for that. And I was like, what? I didn't even know this thing existed. And I would buy novelizations of it.
Why do we like trash?
It's a character flaw or a character strength, depending on who you are.
We're all just raccoons for pop culture.
I feel like millennials, when you look at like the news every day, is like, I guess we're all living in trash. We gotta find something to enjoy about it.
I think there's something to, well, my voice just cracked it. I think there's something. Mr. Simpson. No, I definitely think there is something to, I don't know, it's a thing maybe about having money too, where it's just like, I kind of love rescuing trash toys rather than paying $500 for like a Tony Stark maquette that you're like, am I going to keep this on my coffee table for the next 20 years? Probably not.
And I think, so one of the things is, you know, I always talk about how like I love trash and I love doing things that people call trash, but like every once in a while you're sifting through it. you find a gold, like a piece of gold, and you're like, I loved this. I absolutely loved, like when I picked up the Star Wars, The Ruins of Dantooine, yes, which is a Star Wars Galaxy tie-in novel that online people say is the worst Star Wars book ever written. And I read it like expecting to be like it being trash and like being bad. And then I'm like, I loved this. So it's just like, I always find it interesting when you're kind of like sorting through things that like are discarded. And it's almost like, hey, maybe we should take another look at this weird thing that was kind of fun.
Well, and sometimes you notice too, I mean, I think when we look at the way Star Wars has been going in a way that because the people who are making them, they also like trash as well. They're making things relevant that maybe were made fun of at the time. I think of a really big example being Courtship of Princess Leia.
Like, right.
Honestly, having, because I reread that recently when I was, you know, when I was doing the Star Wars book podcast briefly. But it was like, even in Ahsoka this summer, there were like so many like references and details and things where they were like, oh, like at the time, like I remember I was too young to read it when it came out, but it was one of the first Star Wars books I read. So somewhere between, you know, 96. No, I definitely read it when the special editions came out. So 97, you know, 98, 99, around that time I read it. And I remember, like, I remember the talk about it being like, this was the bad Star Wars novel. Cause it's like this weird romantic comedy situation with, you know, riding rancors and all this stuff. And I'm not saying that the book is that great or anything, but
it's different. It's like it's like a unique style of a thing that you think you knew everything about, you know?
Yeah. And it's just also that idea of like, and I wonder, even when you're reading the novelizations, if there is like a disparity between, like, is there a better novelization of a movie like that than the movie that it came from?
There is, but the easiest way to compare this is there's a video game. The video game novelization, that's 10 times better than the video game. It's just, I feel like that's more, because like, it feels like when you talk about movies, it's like, when I say something's a bad movie, maybe someone else doesn't, just be a little bit, you know, a little bit subjective. With video games, if the video game has terrible controls and doesn't play good, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, it's, you can universally be like, that was kind of a bad game. So there is this game called Fire Warrior, which was this Warhammer game. Okay. And you play as the alien fighting against the humans. Like, the alien is the good guy, like, fighting against the humans.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of a fun idea, but the game is like, really bad. The game is like kind of like unplayable, not enjoyable at all. Like, even me who likes trash, I was like, I cannot play this game. So I went into the book knowing that. And the book ends up being this hilarious commentary on first person shooters as a genre, where it like goes through it. It's like talking about like, what would it be like psychologically for a person to go through what you're doing? Cause like in first person shooters, like crazy things happen all the time. And it's like, you just mowed down like 20 guys while you like run into the da da da. And like the book starts sitting down. It's like, what would it be like to actually do that as a person? And it's like, there's actually some pretty complex character writing where I'm like,
oh wow,
you didn't need to do this. Like, this works and this is effective, but you didn't need to do this. And like, they write in this whole like backstory about like how it's like, yeah, he was just has a really bad dad. And it's like, it felt like the guy was also like, the guy who wrote this was also going through some daddy issues, but like, he goes through it in like some not that way, but like in a way that was like pretty
not
great.
Fun daddy
and, like,
issues.
No, not the fun one. And then as it goes on, it also acknowledges how ridiculous it is, like how quick all those things happen, because it like starts going on like how exhausted he is and like how like in between missions he just like passed out.
Oh, wow, that actually sounds really cool.
Yeah, and it's just very, it's a very fun way of doing something that like objectively, when you writing that, you know, you're kind of writing a trashy book. Like, nobody writes a first person shooter novelization, like thinking that they're making like the Taj Mahal or the Citizen Kane. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's just like, and it's just interesting to see someone work within that and then actually tell some interesting stories in it and like come to some, I was like surprisingly moving character beats, well, which is like very surprising.
No, and I you bring up a great point that like we don't live in a vacuum, and so sometimes the best creative work comes under constraints. I mean, like hearing about the idea that David Fincher wanted to do a World War Z sequel, mostly because he just was like, anything I can do to get my, to maybe get a sci-fi movie off the ground. Like, I don't think, like, studios don't care about originality anymore, but what if I can sneak in? And he's like one of our, you know, most successful living, you know, auteurs in that way. And he's like, they don't want to make anything by me anymore. Like, I guess I'll do a World War Z sequel and maybe it could have been good because it's like elevating that material.
And his career really started with Alien 3 too, right?
Yes, like, yeah, no, of course.
And like that was, of course, like a very like horrible production for him. But
it's my fun background.
Yeah. So that's just, it's very interesting where like, you know, I almost feel like sometimes writing those kind of novels is almost like, you know, if you were trying to get into journalism back in the day and having to write like listicles and like do like terrible art and like, some of those listicles were pretty good, but you know, they were like, you have to get this done because we just need this many clicks to get the SEO. You say this, this, and this. But then inside, sometimes there would be like some pretty good writing and some pretty good articles within it, right? So it's almost like that kind of like back in the day of if you were like kind of working a job and you're like, all right, Top 10 Times, Greedo shot first.
Yeah, I mean, I still enjoy my gender swap Jurassic Park article I wrote for some website that doesn't exist anymore. But actually, it made me think of this idea too, the video game front, where I think it's very funny. And I sent you the Jurassic Park Survival trailer, right?
Yes, you did. It looked
but it's really so funny cool. Because for the, you know, when the Jurassic Park games first came out, like Limited Run is doing, you know, they're re-releasing all the Sega and NES and SNES games. And you're just like, you know, you're just like mowing down dinosaurs. And I mentioned this in my trailer breakdown, but you just made me think like that the technology has changed enough that maybe the reason that was that like Universal or whoever was holding back from allowing more licensed games was because they were like, oh, the Jurassic Park audience, we don't want to mow down dinosaurs anymore.
Right.
That's not the point of those movies. Like, yes, seeing people get eaten is fun, but we care too much about the dinosaurs now on some level. So obviously the park sim was kind of the safest thing to do over the years.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But then Alien Isolation, which has been cited as a kind of an influence to this game, it's like, oh, we know how to make video games where you can maybe capture the feel of this property, like, and it can be done well. Whereas like, yeah, in the 90s, like the Sega Genesis game, which was my Jurassic Park video game, where it's just like Grant just being like, and it's like, they're all like falling asleep, but not all of them, you know, like they're
no,
all
not all
cliffs
them.
And stuff. And like,
some of them ain't waking up. That's for sure.
you're like, I just injected like 50 horse tranquilizers into the T-Rex. Like he's just like, even Sarah Harding would give up, you know? But it's funny that you're, that like element that maybe things like can only be trash until technology changes or, you know, or vice versa. You know, it's like, look, we just want to make trash because maybe there's something inherent to the property that is more fun this way. You know, it is fun to mow down. Like, that's always the thing, right, that people complain about Star Wars video games, where it's like people want to see realistic lightsaber stuff in like Jedi Survivor. And it's just like, but you can't. That's awful. That's horrifying to think about the reality of that.
If you there's like, I think it's like Star Wars Squadron. It's like one of those like more modern day Star Wars games. And like it tried to like do like a realistic like Empire, like it was like a starfighter game, kind of like Rogue Squadron back in the day.
Yeah.
But like with like great graphics. So it all looked really real. But like when you're playing as the Empire, it's like, get bonus points for destroying the medical frigates. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. And like, it's kind of interesting where like it was such a good Empire simulator that you didn't have as much fun playing it because you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's just like when you're fighting the rebellion, it's like, yeah, let's get them. They asked me to blow up a medical frigate. Let's get them. But like when you're playing the Empire, I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Yeah. Well, and then in other games, it's way more fun to be bad, you know?
It is. Like, well, especially like Star Wars, like Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, right? Like back in the day when you're like the ultra mega Sith, you could do so many fun things.
Did you play that?
A little bit. Or I used to always play, like, when you're talking about your Star, like, your Jurassic Park game back up with the Sega Genesis ones, mine was really that the Lost World top down, like, well, what is it called? Like, it's like a real time strategy game where you're like on the island and like you like build a base and you like go and you like fight the dinosaurs and it's all Lost World. Oh. And they have like, okay, is it Chaos Theory or something?
Operation Genesis?
No, but I did play a lot of that.
It's not a park builder. Oh, I don't know what video game this is.
It's basically like you play as like everyone on the Lost World and you like build up bases and like armies and like you gotta like fight the poachers and stuff like that. And you have
what
like,
system was this for?
It was for PC. I had it for PC. And I remember you could like click on all the characters and like just, they would just like say a whole bunch of things. And one of them was like, am I gonna die? In the movie,
Chaos Island.
I die. Chaos Island, yeah. And I think that's Eddie, like, cause in the movie, Eddie does. So if you keep clicking on Eddie and he goes, am I gonna die?
Oh,
in the movie, I died.
Wait, did you know Michael Giacchino did the music for that game?
I did not. That's amazing.
Gosh, she's been really part of the Jurassic franchise.
Forever.
I feel like it's kind of popular knowledge that he did the Lost World, the main Lost World tie-in game and Warpath, I think.
Right. Freaking Warpath. That's ridiculous. Now that's trash. That is straight up trash.
No, it's Mortal Kombat with dinosaurs. Or Rampage, which I really loved growing up as a kid.
Yep. Or Primal Rage. There was Primal Rage.
Or Primal Rage. Excuse me. That's what I was thinking. But also Rampage.
Did you know that Primal Rage had a canceled sequel?
Yes. Yes.
And it was made into a novel. There was a novelization of the sequel, and it goes for hundreds of dollars online.
Whole thing, listeners. Andrew loves like a good, like a juicy tie-in novel that never, for something, I mean, especially something like that, that's never seen the light. Because I think I've watched a video on that Primal Rage sequel where it was like, they did claymation full stop motion for this game, and it didn't come out.
And somebody took the story of that, wrote a novel, and it was called like The Avatars or whatever. And I once went to a store and I found two copies of it at their used bookstore. And like, I sent one to a random person and then I took the other one. And then I was like really hard up on cash one time. So I just like had to like put it online. And like, I put it like low. Like, I think I put it for like the 70 or something, where it's like way lower than it was. And it went far past $200.
Whoa. Oh my God. Like,
Be very nice. Here you go. Enjoy this Primal Rage. Not
priceless
like
artifact.
Someone's got it sitting in a museum right now.
It's just, oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, I know. I just held up the Lost World Jurassic Park strategy guide, which
amazing.
I never owned a PlayStation. So I would play it like at my friend's house and stuff. But yeah, no, it's interesting that maybe for Jurassic Park, at least they've like figured out how to do Jurassic Park games. Well, I mean, and I really enjoyed, you know, it was a sponsored situation with the MetaQuest and the Jurassic World game there. You know, it was going in the right direction as far as like, yeah, the dinosaurs can be like the xenomorph. It's this like singular killer thing. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's creepy, creepy.
Like that was playing that game in like the headset and like you're like, oh, Jesus, like hiding like in a thing. Have you played Alien Isolation?
I have, and I've also heard the novelization.
Yes,
it's like half of an interesting novelization because it's very clear that they weren't that interested in novelizing the video game portions, but they have all this prequel stuff that is about Amanda's Ripley growing up that is like super well written and interesting. But as soon as it gets to the actual video game, it's like not good. It was not a good novelization.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because it's like they had a book they clearly wanted to write where they like put this whole thing and it's like all about her like growing up in Vancouver and what it was like Ellie Ripley was like as a mom and like what their home life was like what was her dad like, and it was like all these like, and it's like again, people dealing with daddy issues in tie-in novels.
It's universal.
That's amazing. I need to make a list of like top 10 novels.
Top 10 daddy issues in sci-fi. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but I did. I that game scared the baboos dust at me. It was like so scary. I never beat it because it was too scary. There's one point where like you're literally supposed to stay still while the like alien like comes up and he's supposed to like look at you, and it's like it's supposed to be like the cinematic moment where he's like comes in, the alien's like looking at you. But I'm like, every time he gets close, I'm like, I gotta run. I kept dying, and then like I watched that playthrough of it like years later, and it's like, no, I was in the right spot to hide. It was just supposed to be a cinematic. They're supposed to look at you and then go away kind of thing. But like I got so scared every time I got close, and I just kept dying because I was like, get me away from these monsters.
I mean, because that could be really exciting with Jurassic, where it's like, you know, again. I mean, maybe they'll even like have a vision is based on movement, like Rexy situation. Like they'll build that into like an actual mechanic.
Yeah, it's like it's interesting because it's like almost like, you know, it's like this is what Dino Crisis could have been like if it was released in like the modern day, because like Dino Crisis was trying to be like an old school Resident Evil, and it was like a fun Resident Evil, but like it was never scary. Like, because like Resident Evil, some of those were scary. Like,
oh my God, Resident Evil,
pretty scary. Dino Crisis never really got the horror element super right, and it was like, and they knew that right away because the sequel is just like, everyone's got a gun, the guns have got guns, like everyone's getting shot, and it's like a but the original one was trying to be scary, and it just really couldn't do it. So like I'm kind of excited about finally getting like a true blue scary spooky Jurassic Park and dinosaur game, because I don't know if there's been any like good horror game.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Alien Isolation is something like that where like I love watching people play scary games. So, I mean, that's kind of how Subnautica got its start, as like, you know, a lot of people, it got really popular. I mean, basically, it was saved by Let's Players from bankruptcy.
That's amazing.
People like Jacksepticeye and like Markiplier and stuff. Like, it was one of those like alpha in beta or whatever kind of games. And then because these huge YouTube streamers like poured, you know, people poured in to support them. And basically, I mean, they've gone on record as being like, yeah, if it wasn't for these YouTubers, like, we would have been bankrupt, you know, and the game probably would never would have come out, which is wild.
That's
to me.
Wild. And like, Subnautica is one of the most watchable games ever. Like, to watch someone else play it is like so captivating, because like I just clicked on a video once, and I didn't look at the runtime at first, and I was just watching the video, and I was like, wow, this is captivating. And I'm like, how long is the runtime? 4 hours? Oh, maybe I won't watch this. Then I'm like, no, I watched the 4 hours of this person playing Subnautica. I just sat down to watch it. I was like, this is great. I love this.
Yeah, I think that's why I got so obsessed with it, because I had already had been watching people playing it for years and thought, and I never thought I was going to play it because I wasn't playing video games at the time. And then they announced it for the Switch. So. And then now I play it like that's my comfort game now. Comforting being in the ocean, and you know, there's something very freeing about being underwater, you know,
and just hearing the soft rumblings of a huge thing in the background.
Yeah, coming after you. I wanted to ask too, because we were also kind of jumping back and forth with research, and like I've been trying to follow your model a little bit, and then it's like I have all this on my. All this stuff on my desk. I'm researching for this Mementosaurus episode I'm going to put out.
Nice.
But when you're the thing that I've noticed, because like the Jurassic Park is Career Cinema, and then that little kind of behind the scenes review of Jurassic Punk, I've noticed, are you coming across stuff that is wrong online?
Oh, yes. So what I normally do, so like I was like the biggest research project I've ever took on was for that original King Kong.
Yeah.
And there have been misinformation about King Kong since the very beginning. When that movie first came out, there was a fake Popular Mechanics for Kids episode. In the Popular Mechanics for Adults back in the day. That'd be hilarious if it was like, here we are, the set of King Kong.
yeah. Popular Mechanics for Kids, you know.
Get your cigarettes in.
Yeah, exactly. But King Kong says light them up.
But there was like these fake making ofs even back then when it first came out. So what I had to do when I was doing that big research project is there are a few big, huge King Kong books about all the making of. But what I had to do is I then had to find I had to go into the sources at the back of the book and track down each and every one of those to find out, because some things are long running myths. Like there was a article about, so like the King Kong rights are always messed up, where it's like, is the novelization public domain? Maybe it's this version that's public domain. And like, I had come across an essay that was like the Mystery Magazine novelization, which is different than the full novelization. It's a novelization that only appeared in a magazine back in the day. There's actually two of them. and a third newspaper, a London Daily Herald thing, where it's like each day they would release a different part of the, and it would be written like a news story. It's really cool. I had to track that down, which was very cool. But there had been an article that said that the thing that was in public domain was the Mystery Magazine thing. So I had to track down where that rumor started, and that rumor started in a awful, awfully written article about, that was like way back in the day, where I think it was like the New Yorker or something was like covering the court case between Universal and De Laurentiis over the 1976 in the 70s. Kong.
Yeah.
And at the very end of that thing, they're saying lawyers think it might have been the Mystery Magazine thing that is actually in public domain. And then I had to talk to my friend who's a lawyer, and he went through the court documents for the King Kong versus, like, Universal versus Nintendo for the Donkey Kong lawsuit, because in the day, they tried to sue them over Donkey Kong. And in that thing, they have to go through all the rights and like specifically put it out. And it was like, that's where you find it's the novelization.
Is that so satisfying when you track down? Because I didn't say I was going to complain anymore on this episode, but it's just one of those things where, so I'm trying, I don't know if I'm trying to be delicate, but it's just like, it's just frustrating because it's like, even in this thing I'm working on, it's like, oh, I heard, at the time, you know, Mementosaurus is like one of the, it's on the a shrinking list of dinosaurs in the original Jurassic Park movies that hasn't been represented in the future of the franchise at all. It's been, you know, an evolution. It's showed up. Where else has it showed up? It showed up in a few other places. I mean, obviously the big reason I'm doing the episode is because they made the action figure this year. And I just was like screaming, like crying, throwing up, like, oh my gosh, she's beautiful. And like, why did they make a toy of this sauropod that shows up for one scene and like maybe five shots total? There's two of them. And you see Ludlow in Lost World be like, wow, you know, and they have the motorcycle drive through the legs and everything. But like, you know, over the last couple of years, there was like, again, just like these rumors of like, it was going to show up in Jurassic World Dominion and stuff. And it was cut, or there was concept art or whatever. And I was like, they released these two very totemic, I believe James Mottram wrote both. Like, I'm holding up these giant books, these giant making of books, which it was like the first time they ever made a making of all the Jurassic World films. And This James Mottram behind the scenes Jurassic Park visual history, I mean, it was really built off the backbone of Jody Duncan, an icon, you know, one of my favorite researchers, writers, article. You know, she was the head editor, I think, of Cinefex for many years, maybe still is at this point. I don't know. I'm like, if anybody knows Jody Duncan, I would love to interview her. She is like one.
I think Cinefex ended a few years ago.
That's right. Yeah. Cinefex has ended, but it's one of those things where like, and maybe you can talk about your process when you go into that stuff, because it was like, okay, I heard a rumor that Mementosaurus is going to be, and this is a peak, because I don't talk about any of this in the episode I put out. I'm just kind of talking about the joy that is that dinosaur. But it was like one of those things where I very much had to like, okay, I hear this. Where did it come from? Then I went like to, I was like, well, because it came out, like, or this rumor came out around when this book came out, I was like, well, I'll go through that and look around. And it's like, nowhere to be found. And then again, like, track it down to, and again, I think it's like a mix of, in the way that we create content now, I think sometimes people make a lot of aspirational leaps when it's not really there. And it bugs me when people are like, well, this implies that this, like you were saying before about the King Kong novelization or the article, you know, the magazine. And it's just this thing of like, But now, like, you've seeded this rumor in people's minds, and now people take it as fact, and a lot of people... Anyway, I could go on,
the,
but...
The biggest thing for me to, like, talk about that idea is, this is, you know, more King Kong, but Godzilla's there as well. He a dinosaur, okay? Godzilla's a dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah.
in the original King Kong versus Godzilla from the 1960s, there was, for decades, a rumor that... In the Japanese version, Godzilla won. In the English North American version, King Kong won.
Whoa.
This rumor is still widely republished. Like, so many... I run across this to this day hundreds upon hundreds of times. I'm not looking it up that much, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like if you're just looking up, like, a basic thing that mentions it, like, and it'll mention this. And for years, I was like, where did this start? And it started... Back in the day, in Famous Monsters of Filmland, they had an article, and they said that in the article. And Famous Monsters of Filmland is not really a journalistic source. It was kind of meant for kids to, like, imagine fun stuff with the movie monsters and stuff like that, right? So they're very fun to go back and read, but the problem is people took that as, like, a journalistic source when it's not really what Forrest J. Ackerman was doing. He was more having fun getting all the props from all these movies and nerding out, really. Like, he was, like, the first thought that they were doing was not about fact-checking at all. But because it was so famous back in the day, and everyone read that, well, Famous Monsters, so everyone read that magazine as a kid, it became just... lore and a fact, and everyone still thinks that way, even though we do now, the Criterion version does have the Japanese cut on it, and there's no difference in the ending, but it's like, for decades it was like that, so.
Well, and to that point too, because it's like, there's obviously these Mandela effect sort of feelings of, like, you know, a big Jurassic Park one is, there was a shot in the film itself at one point, like when it was in theaters, where you see Rexy, instead of popping out and just grabbing one of the raptors, and then, you know, that classic great surprise of Andrew's reenacting, and so am I, that there was a shot of Rexy, like, beforehand, like, going through the hole in the building.
Yes, yes.
But I think it's a little bit of a Mandela effect of, because the raptor lifts its head on the tarp, you know, that plastic tarp or whatever. But it's like, that's not true. It's never been true. Like, there are people older that can confirm it. Again, our memories are shit. And, but I think to me, it's, I guess I have an issue now. And again, it's not like this stuff is, like, the most important thing in the world. Obviously, there's more important misinformation happening.
Yeah, but
I think
it is endemic of how things all, like, it makes you kind of think about how all things in our lives are, like, there is so much stuff in, like, the real important things in life that, like, you need to have researchers who do that level of work there, right? And it's, yeah, like, it all kind of trickles down where it's like, we're just talking about movies and things that don't matter that much. But the thing is, sometimes that misinformation spreads, and the way that it's done, if they do good, they get money. And then someone else goes, oh, I can just write a book like that and get my, and then, like, eventually, like, a journalist is covering the most serious thing imaginable and not doing their homework and doing all that. And again, in journalism right now, it's very hard to be doing investigative journalism because nobody has the money for it. Nobody pays you to do it anymore. So I do feel for them, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean, there's a lot stacked up against people. It just, you know, it's just one of those things where it just feels like, I always want to get, I don't know. It's like, you want to get to the bottom of this stuff a little bit because you want to know the truth. You want to know the truth. You can't handle the truth. it was like, I can't remember what the rumor was. There was a really great Joe Johnston rumor about, I think, Jurassic Park 4.
Was that the one where they everyone thought that it was just going to be like a robot cyborg? Robot dinosaur.
Well, that, I mean, that ended up being real. The script about the half human, half dinosaur hybrid soldier team, like, that was all real. I've read that script.
Was it as good as it sounds?
Honestly, speaking, we're bringing it full circle. Honestly, there was some elements from that trash that were used in Fallen Kingdom and Dominion.
Oh,
and
that's, like, kind
of
cool.
Like, the notion of the can of embryos, like, it makes a bigger deal in, like, because that draft, the John Sayles draft, I believe is a screenwriter who wrote that. Like, they go back to the island and get the embryos, you know, and then there's, like, a a secret mountain, like Alps villa kind of situation. So a little bit of a mix of like the mansion in Fallen Kingdom, and then a little bit of the Dotson headquarters, you know, BIOS headquarters, and you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, it's always like weaving its way back in. I mean, as much as I trash the Telltale Jurassic Park game, and it's trash, and I'll never stop saying it's trash, and everyone should fight me for it, and I will fight all of you like a big pile of zombies and just burst my way out. But no, I actually ended up watching somebody play through, and I'm like, this is kind of fun, but kind of stupid. Like, the idea of Sarah Harding being Jerry Harding, you know, who's with Ellie Sattler, who is the... Oh my gosh, what's the right word for it? Who's taking care of the Triceratops? Right, they're like, right. Oh, like that's Sarah Harding's dad. And I'm like, none of the Lost World would make any sense if Sarah Harding had been to Jurassic Park. And right. Like at the same time, also that would make her like a child to Ian Malcolm's kid. It was just, it's such a lore. I mean, I used to be such a big fan of that idea, but it's so lore breaking that it's like, you can't.
It don't math. The math don't math, as they say.
And I was going to say, I think, or maybe this might be, now we're talking about research and citing your sources and stuff, but I believe there is some elements of that game that have sort of weaved their way into the modern Jurassic World canon, but it's not that that game is canon. It's just that like, elements. Oh, people like those elements. Yeah. Like Mount Saibo.
Okay.
The volcano, the name of the volcano in the Jurassic
movies. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because like that's almost what's going on with Star Wars right now, especially like as they go through, it's like, and we've got Thrawn back. Those books where he appeared originally, those aren't canon, but he's back. And actually, the same writer wrote some more books about him that are in canon. And you're like, huh? Oh, okay. I mean, sometimes I feel like that. Have you seen the meme of the cat that's like, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes we're trying to figure out what is canon in Star Wars can be like that.
Well, I mean, but, yeah, I feel like, I mean, I don't need, I'm not even in the mood to talk about Marvel stuff right now, but like.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Podcast The Ride brought up this as a very good point, that they told that first story in some ways so well that everyone, I think Mike Carlson said, he was like, oh, we're done now. Like after Endgame, like we finished the story, and Marvel's like, no, wait, like this is supposed to continue forever. We did a too good a job with Endgame, you know, in that regard. And I find that very delightful. But I think overall, again, when I wanted to chat with you and kick off this year, was just, I think this is like the good intention, you know, New Year's resolution stuff of like, I think we should be, you know, we don't need to be rude to people, although maybe I have been passive aggressive and rude in this episode to some extent. But it is just like,
I don't think you've been that rude, Steve.
Although I sometimes will be cheeky and I'm like, you know, commenting on whoever's Jurassic community members Instagram or YouTube or whatever and being like, oh, like this is awesome. Like we're like link to the source, maybe, you know, I don't know. It's just,
well, it's even like, well, especially like, sometimes, you know, artwork gets stolen a lot, and now yeah, AI is stealing, and now AI is stealing the artwork. It's just like, you know, all of these things, like, it's like, the source matters always, whether you're reposting, like, a webcomic silly thing or whatever, you know what I mean?
Just put it in the description. Nobody reads the descriptions, nobody reads the titles, but just
do it. Just
do it. It's just good karma, I think, just a little bit, too.
Yeah.
You can be wrong about your assumptions, and I, you know, I like again, it's maybe just an attitude situation and it doesn't matter. And people just want to walk into things thinking they're correct. But if they admit that they're wrong, that's great too. You know, and I do appreciate that new Rockstars, you know, that Eric Voss at the end of the year be like, here's what I was wrong about, you know, like, because he is posting a lot of stuff that comes at it from a very like, based on all the information we have, here's what I know. Right. Yeah. My problem sometimes is like, but we're public, so we don't know everything. So it's hard. I mean, that's the whole, you know, I think this year with See Jurassic Right, and I was talking to Brad Jost about this from the Jurassic Park podcast, where it's like, I think some of us are just tired on speculating on things.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. I would rather get into the meat of, you know, stuff, so to speak, to make it feel less disposable, you know?
Especially with, like, Jurassic Park. We're at the point where Jurassic Park, there's years upon years of random weird things you can go and latch onto and dissect, right? Like, you know, there's everything from the wackiest comics you've ever read to, like,
Velociraptor riding a helicopter. That's all. Exactly. Piloting a helicopter. That's all I'll say.
To, like, very serious movies and tie-in books that are, like, really well-written and, like, in-depth and, like, add to the overall story of the thing. So, like,
shout out Tess Sharp.
I just think that there are elements that, like, especially now, it's like speculation is, like, you know, there's so much to do. It's like, it's sometimes like, it's the same with like Alien. Like, I used to do Alien podcasts and it's like, there is never going to be a shortage of Alien content to cover because there's like so many comics and novelizations of the comics, which are usually better than the comics, but it's an entirely different thing. But anyways.
I mean, Alien has its own, I think we were texting the other, like, William Gibson's script has been turned into an audio drama.
And a comic book and a novelization, but the novelization is from a different draft than the audio drama.
Wow.
And it's so, it's complicated, but the novelization is the best one because the first draft of that script is the best. That's my opinion, but
I think a lot of people have gotten burnt out from doing a weekly podcast. Yeah. For now, you know, I mean, again, the Percast, we closed out our run. I think by the time this comes out, it'll be this week or something like that. But, you know, 8.5 years. And obviously that was zero research and zero. I mean, I want to be able to celebrate the community and the ways that we can add to the conversation versus like, what is this thing not doing for me? Because, I mean, again, not to bring up Marvel again, but I think it's that thing where, like, I remember when, you know, the last, like, those newer seasons of X-Files came out and when Game of Thrones really, like, tanked, you know? And it's just, like, this thing of, like, I think a lot of people aren't willing to say when they're done with something that maybe they liked a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, for me, it's like, you know, eventually Marvel just didn't work for me as much anymore. So I just, instead of being like, I can't believe I'm gonna make a 10-part series on how Marvel's gone down the hill, I was like, nah, I'm just gonna like move on to something else that I like. And like, you know, the people who like those, hey, it's awesome, good for you. You know, it's like sunk cost fallacy is a fallacy, right? Like, because it's like, you sometimes, if you're like, you've done like read 30 books, if you're not enjoying them, if you're not enjoying the five of these books in a series, you don't have to read the whole thing. You can just call it. If you're not enjoying every single season of a show, you can still love the seasons of the show you did, but you don't have to keep watching. Like, it's like, you know, you just kind of, sometimes you just kind of let go.
Yeah. This all, again, feels very New Year's, like, you know, live with intentionality. And, you know, it's just that thing of like, especially because.
Got to us in November. Here's the 10 things we hate about the new. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I think the Dominion, I think, broke my brain a little bit. If you go to the Jurassic Park podcast, Brad, Justin, and I talked for like 4 hours and he split it up into 3 episodes. It was so much fun. But it's that thing of like, again, the cycle of being excited and anticipating and all that stuff, you know, as fans of things, because it was like, oh, it's coming out here. Like, and then like 3 months out or something, it was like, psych, you know, actually it's going to come out a year later. I don't even remember what the whole, I don't even need to relitigate it, but it was just one of those things of like, oh, okay, well, what do we do with our time now? You know, and exactly. It's like, you know, how can I, you know, making this podcast, how can I make it interesting and fulfilling without, I mean, I just got very lucky that when I started it, it was like really getting back into liking Jurassic Park after Jurassic World came out, like getting excited for that for Fallen Kingdom, and how the community itself kind of rose up as like we adults were like, yes, we will still like dinosaurs. But we don't have that to anchor us right now. And I'm like, well, what do I want to do at that time?
Well, I think that some of my favorite episodes from that first season was you rereading your old fan fiction, right? And like that was like a fun, you're getting people in, they like read their own fanfic, and then they like then you like have them on and just talk about movies or whatever, like the movies that they like. So like I think like even if you're looking back to your original first season of the podcast, I think you did a great job with not just being the lead.
No, for sure.
You did like a lot of like little cool, unique things and unique perspectives on things. So like I think you're always doing a great job,
Stephen. Thank you, sir. It's that thing. It's the sequel problem, right? It's like the first one you have to do.
Right.
There's something inside you that's compelling you. Whereas, ever since then, I felt like, well, what do I want to, you know? But I know it's so funny because Stephanie Cook, who also was a very big Percast guest and has been a big Sea Jurassic Rights supporter and has been a guest, she just posted her Fan Fiction Friday like throwback because, oh, is that Loomis?
Yes, that's Loomis.
I just saw Loomis's tail. But yeah, like she just posted like 6 years ago or whatever was when. Oh, yeah. He's so handsome. He's an orange boy for those
he's an orange boy, but ooh, he's not dumb. Everyone says the orange boys is dumb. Not that he took the smarts from all the other orange
boys. No, he has more in common with Penny Lane than I think a lot of the other. He's more Garfield and Penny Lane than I think like a lot of the other boy cats, you know, boy orange cats. I'm also just curious like how your YouTube has, you know, because you've been doing tons of podcasts, but I feel like it's been really exciting to watch your YouTube videos and see that community that you've been fostering in the comments and stuff. And
yeah, it's been interesting. I would say this year was not good. 2023 was not the best.
It hasn't been a great year for most people.
No, it has not. But, you know, there's been some growing pains, just to say that. And it's just, I think where I'm in a good spot now where it's, you know, I finally got a good group of people and I'm finally, things are going better in the future, I think. But it was just, there were growing pains where, you know, sometimes you work with people and you don't get along with them as well. Sure. And like all the intricacies of being a creative in like any platform, right? Like sometimes you go like, oh, I thought we had a good repartee, but turns out we just don't like each other. And it's like, that stuff happens, right? It's just natural selection almost of making something and moving forward. So it's been an interesting transition period for me for that reason, because it's been like a year where like a lot of kind of crappiness stuff happens. And like, even like that's like even attached to like people who I was close to on the platform, one of them like passed away. Like, so like there was like growing pains, even in like, in like real, real horrible, sad things. So it's just interesting trying to like figure out what's next, you know, trying to figure out what's next, what's best for me. It's just like, cause you know, my stroke, like I'm still suffering from the after effects of that. So like some days if it's like raining, like I just can't do nothing. Like, it's just like, I have so many days where I'm like, half of my body just does not want to do anything. And I just got to lay down and it's just like, I can't do anything. So it's just trying to figure out what's a good method. And what's nice about having a Patreon is that most of people just understand like, hey, if you can't do it today, don't worry, it's fine. And it's like, oh, that's nice. Cause they just want to support you. So they're there more to create a community than they are to like, be like, give me my content right there. And I'll get my pitchfork out.
Well, and I always feel like, you know, in the age of parasocial relationship, I feel like, I don't know. It's one of those things where.
Yeah, that's a tricky road to balance.
But,
for sure,
but it's that thing of like, you would like to think that the grace that you give could be afforded to you. And it's not like something you expect, but it's like, if I'm chill, hopefully that attitude.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of where I've gotten. I've like just been like, Just chill.
It's hard. I mean, it's hard though, because, you know, again, it's like that thing where a lot of times you also hold yourself up to a high standard, and sometimes you can hold other people up to that. But then other times you can be like, but I don't hold, like I give a lot of grace. How come nobody gives me grace? It's all the kind of natural stuff that I feel like Yeah, I mean, I definitely felt very humbled in that sense of like, I mean, I feel very thankful that anybody has come back to listen to the Jurassic Pod after like, I did one episode like at the end of January, and it was about Super Mario World, the Nintendo World, and then so which is like vaguely, you know, because of Universal, and then like literally did nothing until October. So I hope to move through 2024 with a sense of like, I just want to find the kernels of fun that we can,
exactly.
What's actually like, what's actually engaging. Versus,
yes. Again,
it's like, maybe this isn't the best for SEO and algorithms, but like, you know, I just would rather have a good conversation with somebody instead of trying to reach a million people or something. I don't know.
Yeah. And a good thing of that is like the other day I was like hanging out with a friend on like a live stream for like a YouTube thing. And like, we only had like 8 people who were like on at the time, but like in her comments, like everyone was like making t-shirts of the funny things you're going to say. And like on all this stuff, like where it's like, that's there was so much like engagement, and like everyone was clearly having a great time, where you're like, oh, like I probably enjoy this better than if had I been like 2,000 rando people, right? Like it's just like you it sometimes it's a smaller audience, but they can be more engaged, and they can more be like really excited to talk to you, and like, and it can just be more fun sometimes. So it's just trying to get into the headspace of like, I know, but like for you though, you gotta live. So like, I hope you get like a livable version of that.
No, I mean, you know, it's yeah, there's all that layer to it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, again, it's, you look at the different eras. I was tweeting about this recently of like, how would I have made content if I was born when Karen Kilgariff was born? If I was born in, you know, the 70s, if I was born in, like, you know, what kind of, you know, phonographs if we were born in like 1915, you know, and like,
yeah, oh, wow.
Like I would still be the same person in theory, but like, the conditions and the situation I grew up in would obviously be very affected, and the technology.
Yeah. I imagine you in the 70s, you have like a bus that's like painted all psychedelic colors, and it's like the cat bus. And it's like, you know, you go and you like have like a pirate radio station that you just like, you know, run from the freaking bus. And every time you just like show up, and there's like just a full of cats, like,
yeah,
just like, welcome to the cat bus. And I'm here, Stephen Ray Mox.
Oh, I even figure out how to get it be like the actual cat bus, where like when the door opens, it's like a weird fleshy, like, meow. That sound it makes, it goes. I think that's my most successful TikTok, is me doing the impression of Cat Bus. But you know, it's just that thing of like, it's exciting at the same time to know that like in any era, I would still have the drive to create stuff. But I think thinking about it in that way makes me a little bit more forgiving on myself.
Yeah.
And again, a little bit before we started podcasting, just like the ways that people who are 20 years old that need to create now. Oh, I love Hysteria's leg, the little sock sticking up. But it's just, yeah, it's just like, it's that thing all the time of like, you know, I just don't ever want to be that person that's like, oh, kids today, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like,
exactly.
It's like, no, they have it so much harder in some ways, where, I mean, it's just different every era. And it's like, imagine having to start competing with the algorithm. It's just like, that would feel insurmountable. That feels insurmountable to me. Whereas like again, like when I started creating content, like, you know, YouTube was brand new, like my sophomore year of college. And it was like, you know, if you, you know, it was never a guarantee, but like, if you, you know, did this, you know, maybe did hashtag whatever, like, and you engaged honestly, that you could, you know, get to some place. Whereas like now it's like, I'm like the, speaking of Stephen King, I'm like the guy who gets out of prison after like 90 years. He's just like, oh, I don't know what anything is anymore.
What is going on?
Like I'm from a different time. I don't belong in this era anymore. And it's just, I just think it's like, we can't get mad at everybody and just screw everybody. But I guess for me, it's like, I want to be able to to focus on the things that matter. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I have this feeling that, like, if I was born in the early 1900s, you have you ever, like, gone back and, like, those, like, cryptid people, like, where, like, one person is like, I believe Bigfoot is like this, and then there's, like, his arch nemesis, and is like, well, I believe because of this Bigfoot photograph I found here, that it actually moves like this. And it's like this, like, and they just have, like, competing letter articles, like, yes, in like a journal, and I'm like, that probably would have been me. Like, I would have had like a nemesis where I'm like, excuse me, Godzilla would never do this.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be institutionalized. Man has too many cats.
I mean, yeah, they'd definitely be doing that for me too.
Yeah, any neurodivergent people were screwed. But I mean, that aside, but I mean, that just reminds me. I mean, again, one of my favorite Bone Wars stories.
Yeah. You Bone know, Wars.
Which I was thinking about, too, of, like, other than, like, medical, I feel like paleontology is, like, they love to dramatize the field itself, which, I mean, that's Jurassic Park. But, like...
Well, yeah, I guess it's just because, like, doing the work is not the most interesting to watch, because it's, like, very, very slow, like, toothbrush.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's still seen as cooler than, like... There's no movies. Well, there might be. I want to hear it. Is there any movies about microbiologists or?
Well, then, wasn't that like early Crichton, like the Andromeda strain and stuff?
Well, that,
isn't
that kind of. I guess that might be microbiology. That might actually be microbiology. That you say that, but then you know this is the year of Oppenheimer, where it's a movie about physicists, yeah. And you know, and all that, and the Bone Wars. My favorite thing is like one of the scientists put the sauropod tail where the head should be and the tail where the head, you know, flip the tail and the neck. And then they're like unveiling it. And then the other scientist, his rival, was like, you put it on backwards, you silly, silly, silly sausage. And he's like, no, I did. And then he like ran out of the room, like humiliated. And it's like, I know there's drama like that, you know? I mean, obviously on a more serious note, like, at some point, like, are they going to make the Black Birder story, you know, about that scientist who that Karen, like, is like Meryl Streep going to play the Karen? Like, are we going to dramatize this into a movie? Like, if it helps shed light on issues, maybe, but hopefully right. It isn't, you know,
yeah.
Again, you know, when we live in the era too of like, you know, scientists watching movies and being like, you know, but honestly,
it's like, I'm always so conflicted because there's so many YouTube videos that get recommended, like a man who uses guns says, what is this? How good these guns are. And I'm like, I don't care. It's a sci-fi movie. They go, well, boo and boo, boo. But it does matter to an extent because it's real life stuff, right?
Like, yeah.
Especially if it's like, you know, going at like, is this depiction of this job accurate? And it's like, that's actually useful information. I'm just,
yeah. And you could see a movie like that shedding light on that situation.
Yeah.
Whereas like Common Descent, like it's a podcast on not just paleontology, but, you know, evolution. And they go into all these great topics, you know, about the history of life on Earth and all that good stuff. And like on this podcast, tending to interview scientists. And
yes.
And it's that thing of like where a lot of them are like, they're movies that they can't hold up to the rigor of. Well, you know, of real life, you know, like,
yeah, that's my, like, so like say Jurassic Park versus like actual, like scientifically accurate thing. I always view Jurassic Park as like, it's movie dinosaurs because it's just as much about creating movies, especially that first one is like just as much about the creative process. Like you could read a lot of that just being about the creative process of filmmaking or any creative process, really. Like in terms of like, oh, the fleas and like, talking about the fleas and like the imaginations of theater and all that stuff. Whereas like, you know, Walking with Dinosaurs, yeah, I would love, I have watched videos where someone goes through and talks about any inaccuracies with Walking with Dinosaurs and like goes to it in detail. And like a lot of times it's like, hey, they didn't know this at this time, but this is what this is. And like that stuff is really interesting to me because that's a documentary. It's like trying to present how life would have been like back then. So like, I think it's valuable to be like, have that separation.
Yeah.
Like the separation between church and state, but it's like movie dinosaurs and like documentary real dinosaurs.
Yeah. We just get into this, you know, stage of it's hard to admit your flaws because sometimes you don't, if you admit your flaws, then other people could take advantage of that or jump on you.
Right.
So there is this like thing where, you know, one of the funniest things ever, you know, and I think somebody like Colin Trevorrow has obviously, I think just professionally, you can, and I've been kind of obsessed with it, but you can professionally tell, again, I've met him once. Or no, twice. I met him twice. Because at the Jurassic World Dominion premiere, Perry Nemiroff introduced me as the biggest Jurassic Park fan to Colin Trevorrow. And I was like, that's too much pressure.
You're like, oh.
And he's probably like, I don't care. But no, he's a very sweet person. And I can tell professionally, he's somebody who is actually, I feel like maybe kind of has these kind of conversations. Because he is somebody who's like, you can tell has grown in his art. Because, right. Like, remember the first thing he tweeted as director was no feathers? To then all the way back, like, finally by the time we get to Dominion, like, showing feathers, really getting into the science. Jurassic World Dominion is a movie where they're saying the dinosaurs' names with the period, you know, with the era they're from, you know.
Quetzalcoatlus, right.
Late Cretaceous. Like, I've said that a bunch where it's like, it's not bad to admit your weaknesses.
No, it's not. It's not. It all kind of depends on the movie too, right? Like, it's like, you know, now that you're going into talking about peasants, that's cool. Like, I'm all for like changes and like things like that. So I'm not like, they can only be dragging their tails. That's the only dinosaurs I accept. Yeah. And they have to dance.
I love a good dragon tail.
They have to be joiced by John Goodman. Those are the only dinosaurs I accept.
Like, Barbara, happy 30th anniversary. We're back. It was like a month ago.
It's not back. No one remembers. There's this movie that I had a really good time with last year called Claw. Have you heard
of
Claw?
No, I haven't heard of it at all.
It's about like these friendships, and one of them is like a comedian and blah, blah, blah. And they like, they get stopped in the desert and they like have to like go and ask somebody for help. And it turns out that person has a dinosaur, like has a like velociraptor in the thing. And like the effects are not like super, super good, but like the acting's really good. And like, I found the characters very kind of like heartwarming and charming. And like, I enjoyed following their story. And it was like one of those things where it's like, yeah, like the velociraptor is not going to be super accurate, because that's not really what the movie's about. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's about to be we're doing it like kind of like a old school Jurassic Park. Like, oh, isn't it scary? There's like one dinosaur like creeping about, and these two people are trying to survive. And like, it takes some people out. And stuff like that. So,
wow, that sounds awesome. Well, that's, yeah. I mean, again, I think I initially pitched you this as like recommends of stuff to check out, which we kind of did
throughout the episode.
Some vague stuff to, or, you know, just some stuff to kind of think about and look
at. Some hot movie novelizations that are just going to be flying off the shelves as soon as the episode goes up.
I mean, I have the novelizations for all six Jurassic World movies. And I've read. The Lost World one was one that I read the most as a kid. Like that one, that's my childhood copy. Yeah. Whereas Jurassic Park, I got it later in life. JP3, I got later in life. Obviously the Jurassic World movies, but like maybe I'll do those are junior novelizations. So those aren't even movie novelizations. They're junior novelizations.
But they've
changed stuff in them.
That is cool.
There's like stuff that's different. Like it's implied in the Lost World that, remember the ending, like sort of diorama scene where it's kind of panning over, it's implied that like that's Kelly's dream.
Interesting. Yeah. Weird things that are changed.
Yeah. So stuff like that, but no, Claw. I'll definitely check that out. Claw's really exciting. Fun. And I mean, obviously there is no release date yet for JP Survival. Well, maybe there is by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah, I don't know.
With video games, I don't think things change. And like, things in video games change quarterly. They don't change day to day.
Yeah, it's not going to be like a Netflix thing where it's like, oh, you see that ad on the Super Bowl? Well, now you can go home and watch the movie.
Get it
the next day because it was really bad. But anyway.
It's like, I'm not even sure when I'm going to get the limited run, you know, re-releases of all those. I'm like, because I first thought for some reason it was coming out, like, I thought I was like getting it in like a week or two, and then it was like squinting, like Q4 2024. Oh, God damn it. It's fine. And, you know, it was just one of those things I was just, you know, but for 2024, is there anything as far as like even just lit wise or stuff you want to do for your channel or stuff that you're just thinking about or keeping in mind? Again, I remember way back in the day, when I first started listening to Georgia Hardstark and Ali Ward's podcast, Slumber Party, I wrote in on a New Year's episode of like, because they were saying like, how do you interpret New Year's resolutions or that kind of thing? And I always feel like I have like there's an ethereal resolution, which is like live with intentionality. Like I said, you know, that kind of stuff. Give yourself more grace. And then there's also the like, I'm going to read 52 books, you know, I'm going to kill one man and watch the light leave his eyes, you know. All the classic, you know.
Classic goals. Everyone got those goals. We all know. Yeah. We all know.
Hell of a thing, killing a man, you know. I'm going to pet 52 cats. I don't know.
I bet you can do that one.
But yeah, there's always like either you do one or the other, you try and do one of each. So
yeah.
What's that for you?
So I did a thing like recently on my thing because I was thinking about the new year, and I went through my book collection and I picked out 100 books I want to read in 2024. And the idea is basically like if I only get to like 20 of these, like that's fine. It's just like pure aspirational and like no pressure to it. So like the idea is like, I always like to go wait. Cause normally what people do is they do 24 books to read in 2024. So I went ham and just did like, oh, and my goal is to get 24 out of those 100 books read.
Okay.
And if I do that, that's a cool accomplishment, but I give myself so many options that like, oh, I'm not feeling it this way. Oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, I'm going to do this. So it's like, it gives you more options and you can kind of like, I think that like if you attach maybe even more aspirational goals with a more laissez-faire attitude, you can and you'll be and make it so that you'll be happy if you only reach half of the goal or only reach like a third of the goal. But it doesn't mean you can't have an amazing crazy goal, but it just have to be a person like you just have to go in with a mindset like if I even achieve like a tenth of this goal, that's awesome. Like that's an achievement. Like that's, I'm super proud of that. And that's kind of where I'm trying to go in my brain and like trying to go like, here's an amazing cray cray. If you got this, that would be amazing. But hey, if you only got like a half of it or even a quarter, like that's still amazing. You still did it. That's still awesome. So like kind of trying to be like both super aspirational and then also being okay with the realistic end of things.
That's great.
I also really want to have another month where I like fully immerse myself into dinosaur fiction again. Cause I have a lot of dinosaur books that I need to get to. And like, I have dinosaurs books that are like nonfiction that I want to get to. And then I want to like compare it to something that's like pure goofy trash. Like there's a book I have that's like, yo, what if Napoleon fought dinosaurs? And it's like, it's just Waterloo, but there's velociraptors. The other people are riding velociraptors and coming to take out Napoleon. Well, you know,
Star Wars High Republic author Daniel Jose Older, he wrote, before he was writing The High Republic, he wrote a series of like Civil War and dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah. That's another one. Like it's like something called like The Lost Regiment, I think, is like one of the names.
I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it's just always such a pleasing notion of like, when Luce Tomlin Brenner and I did our annual Halloween episode this year, we learned that there is a contingent of cryptid / modern day dinosaur people that use that as proof that God is real because it means that dinosaurs were actually in the Garden of Eden and all this stuff. But there is something so delightful about it in fiction. Part one of the themes of this episode.
There's also a series called like the Dinosaur Knight, the Dinosaur Lord. It's like it's supposed to be like Game of Thrones, but they got dinosaurs. Like it's supposed to be like, you know, a Game of Thrones-esque fantasy where it's like supposed to be like very serious. This is house, blah, blah, blah. But like they got dinosaurs. And I'm like, hello.
That's what Dinotopia is. That's what, you know, again.
Oh, yeah.
Not an ad, of course. You can see all the stuff I've done with magic. But one of the things I've loved about their Lost Caverns of Ixalan is that it's kind of like, you know, a fantasy with dinosaurs, you know, it's a Mesoamerican themed fantasy, but you know, it's that idea of like, I want dinosaurs wearing robes. God damn it.
Yes. I want to read some more Dinotopia books. So the one Dinotopia book I read, I really enjoyed. It was a sweet book.
This is my childhood Dinotopia.
Oh,
so
see?
I don't know why there's a big X across the sauropod. Maybe it's just to note that this was mine, but
that was in your punk era where you're like, no dinosaurs.
But like, this is like truly, again, dinosaurs wearing robes, dinosaurs having given high fives, and it's all very Game of Thrones. Oh yeah, here we go. Here's like a Game of Thrones thing. Like I'm gonna watch you before your very eyes, Andrew. It's a street scene. There's like a kid with a little stick and hoop and a little like compy, and then there's stegosauruses and styracosauruses and brachiosaurus wearing armor and robes and flowers and stuff, and it's just like a whole society.
That's amazing.
But
in Warhammer 40K, there's a faction that is like elves, but like their idea of like basically night elves are basically elves that have dinosaurs. Well, and like their entire faction is space elves that they ride dinosaurs. They're called like the Exodite Eldar, and it's maximum goofy. It's like, oh yeah, an elf just riding a T-Rex gonna eat your space marine. And I'm like, yes, queen, eat him, eat him.
I know. See, we may not get a new Jurassic Park movie next year, but like there's so much dinosaur
there's
stuff out
so
there.
So much dinosaur stuff
we,
out there.
You know, again, I think I've talked recently, you know, it mainstream level, it's hard to see anything outside Jurassic Park. But if you look a little deeper, there's a lot out there. So that's awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah. And again, like I, not all of it is trash. You know, I talk a lot about trash, but there is like some really cool art and like just, you know, that Dinotopia thing you just showed me.
No, James Gurney is a genius.
Yeah. That's like pure art. Like that is beautiful vistas drawn extremely well, very creative. And like, you know, I like a good thing once in a while too. Okay. You know, dinosaurs can be it all and my tastes can sometimes branch out to things that are not trash. But
I mean, you always speak about it so eloquently, so, and humorously and genuinely. So it's always, it was a joy to hear you talk about thank you again for coming again, of course. And then I was just gonna say for myself that, you know, I think again a big part of this episode was this research, was engaging with their stuff, and it has been really fun to do all these research. Again, I'm just gonna keep holding these books up to prove that you did it. But it's that thing of like, I think I'm too often somebody where I'm like excited about this stuff, but you know, it's like, it's that, it's the difference between having the collection and actually engaging with it better. So I'm definitely want to try showing off in that way of like, not showing off, but like being like, hey, here's this really cool, like, here's Dinotopia, here's like this childhood Mementiosaurus book, like all that kind of stuff. Like, this is exciting and there's cool stuff that we can glean from it, because, you know, I think people are starting to realize now that the internet isn't this like limitless place, and that there's so much contained in a good book, you know? Like,
it's true. It is really true though. Like there is something to like, especially if you're doing research projects, like like even having an e-copy, I always find it better. If I'm doing hardcore research, I always find it better to have a physical copy, because you can put like a footnote in there and you can just flip back. And it's also like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because, you know, I've watched so many like Indiana Jones movies and like the Mummy movies or whatever. Like to me, it's like, I'm reading a book. I'm being awesome. Like I'm just like, ooh, look at me. Like I'm going through these ancient tomes. Like you just feel cooler.
Well, and it's that exciting thing where I think this is a good example of like when I graduated from high school, I digitized like a handful of childhood photos. And recently, just going back to my dad's place in Orange County, like I've been holding onto this like one childhood photo of this event. And then I found a photo album of like 20 photos from that day.
Oh, that's,
and
I'm just awesome.
Like, in my head, it's like over the years that kind of like, and also, I mean, obviously I scanned it 20 years ago now, so the resolution bad and stuff, but it's just like, I think we're reaching a point of like, we've, the sources have looped back on themselves so many times that I think we're all really hungry for new perspectives, fresh takes, more information on these kind of apocryphal stories. And we want to go back to the source.
Yes, exactly. And one of the maximum values of doing something like this is using your library, because libraries are this amazing thing where now libraries are actually one of the best community centers for people to go to. Cause it's like, if you are someone who's like in the unhoused population, like you can go be warm in the winter. You can use computers at the library to like print out things, and like all of these very essential things are like almost like, that's not what it's designed for, but it's allowed to happen because people are going and reading the books and like putting money into the local libraries and like using their facilities. And like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's really simple, but it's free. Like you just getting a book out, it's free. You read a book, you bring it back, but you're like creating jobs and creating places for people who really need it to go. And there's not a lot of places of those nowadays, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Getting harder and harder out there.
No. I mean, again, it's, yeah, we're trying to foster the communities that we want to see in the world. So
I, back in the day, did you ever have those, like, those old go to the library posters? Like,
yeah.
There was, I remember the one with Yoda where he's just, like, sitting on the thing and he's like, read you well. Expand your mind, your child. And it's just like, yeah.
I have the Princess Leia.
Oh, yes.
Reading you're my only hope.
Right, yes, I think I might actually own a version of that because you sent me the link and I bought it. Yes, okay, so it's somewhere in there. I gotta go find it.
Again, we gotta pull everything out and just be what do we have?
Even in our own collections, those mysterious things.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. Where can people follow you, find you, engage with you?
You can engage with me on the YouTubers. It came from the page on YouTube. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm Wisteria Queen of the Paperbacks, which just confuses people because that's what I use for all of my things that I've had people on YouTube be like, we don't know where to find you. Who? You're not a cat. I'm like, I am actually.
Yeah, so joke's on you.
But yeah, so, you know, those are my two main things where I mostly post cats and post pictures of cats beside books that I'm reading. And then, you know, perfect. On YouTubes, I just do whatevs.
Yeah, whatevs.
You never know. Just have fun.
Every day's fun. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. Yeah, you listener right there. I'm looking at you. Yeah, you. Thank you. I really appreciate you. Hold on to your butts until next time, and I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.